podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Messi.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Bosses up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome along to the latest edition of The Punt podcast here with William Hill. Good to have you with us ahead of the international football this weekend. We're going to look at the home nations, but not Wales, because they kick off inexplicably at 11:30 on Thursday morning. And given it is now 10:35 on Thursday morning, I've not got time for you Wales this week. But we'll have a look at England versus Holland. We'll also look at Scotland versus Costa Rica, Northern Ireland versus South Korea, and Turkey versus the Republic of Ireland. We've got bets domestically as well, with Gav Pushlowski looking at League One and Al Ross looking at League Two. And we'll have a European selection from the boys as well. They'll look at one of the other friendlies this weekend. We've also got, from The Guardian coming onto the podcast, Stuart James, who's going to discuss whether England should boycott the World Cup. And we will sort Gareth Southgate's squad out for him as well by picking the first England 11 for that first match of the World Cup 2018. My name is Dave Kellner, and I'm joined in the studio, first of all, by Andy Excel. Good morning to you, Andy.
Good morning. Jack Wilshere.
Oh, that's all that needs to be said. And on the line is Derek McGovern. Derek, how are you, sir?
Yes, very well. Looking forward, as ever, to the international fixtures. And if you believe that, you believe anything.
What do you make to that draw in the Champions League, Derek? Liverpool versus Manchester City. You must be looking forward to that, are you?
Well, looking forward to it, but it's a draw we didn't want, really. I mean, it doesn't feel like a Champions League game. It's similar to those days when we always got Chelsea in these about this time. In the Champions League, you wanted the glamour. You know, it's a glamour clash, I suppose, but not. It doesn't have the same draw as Barcelona or Real Madrid or even Juventus. And I say, the same applies to City. I'm sure they didn't want that draw either. It's going to be a tough one.
I think the bookmakers don't want that draw either this early on in the competition, do they?
No, we'd have preferred them to stay apart, for turnover reasons and interest. But it'll be a big one, that's for sure.
Let's get stuck into the international friendlies then, and we'll start with Turkey versus the Republic of Ireland. Turkey in the betting even money, the draw 21-10 with the Republic 16-5. Cenk Tosun to score and Turkey to win was 12-5. That's been enhanced to 5-2. And Shane Long to score and the Republic of Ireland to win was 13-2. That's been enhanced to 15-2. And I suppose, Andy, Martin O'Neill will want a reaction, because they were humiliated, it has to be said, in that knockout match against Denmark. And they've got decent opponents here as well, Turkey. They've got a good chance to bounce back here, because Turkey have lost three of their last four games. But this match is in Antalya. The atmosphere will be vociferous, no doubt, and it might be difficult for Ireland, who have serious trouble in front of goal.
Yeah, they're just awful, basically. I'm not going to dress it up. If you look at the games they played in that against Denmark and then Wales as well in those games, they're just awful. And I can't be with them in any way, shape or form. I don't see where they're going. Turkey are also in awful form. And the thing about, everybody still says that it's a horrible place to go to Turkey, but actually, people tend to get results there. So it's not as bad as you think. I can't bring myself to fancy either team, so I'm just going to stick with the draw at 21-10.
Seems wise. 21-10, the draw in the game. Ireland's primary goal scorer, Derek, is Shane Long. I think that tells you all you need to know about the national team.
Exactly. He doesn't score at international level or club level, and the Irish have got so many injuries as well. They've only got about half a dozen players that most people would recognise, and they're all injured. Martin O'Neill's called in a load of, uncapped players that nobody's ever heard of, and I can't see them getting anything at Turkey. You mentioned that Turkey are in bad form, but They've only lost twice in 16 home games. And Ireland, I've been looking at their record in friendlies away from home. They haven't won any of their previous 9 friendly matches on the road. So you can, you know, the Irish odds don't appeal at all. Interestingly, in the FIFA World Rankings, Ireland are above Turkey. Ireland are 31, Turkey 38. And I was going to try and work out how daft these FIFA rankings are. Well, I'll give you a sentence now, just to underline that. Cape Verde Islands are 2 places above Russia in the FIFA World Rankings. Can you believe that? Russia is 63, Cape Verde Islands are 61. So that tells you all I need to know about FIFA. I used to accept great store by them, which one of the reasons explains why I'm so skint at the moment. I'm going to go for Turkey here. They don't make too many mistakes at home, despite what Andy's just said. And they're meeting an island side that are full of kids. I know that the draw in friendly internationals with nothing at stake is always a reasonable bet, but I just fancy Turkey strongly in this one.
Turkey even money. I think that enhanced odds offer of Cenk Tosun to score and Turkey to win, enhanced from 12 to 5 to 5 to 2, will be popular as well. Cenk Tosun, of course, got 4-3 for Everton and scored twice in their win against Stoke last weekend as well, so that might be one way in for Turkey versus the Republic. Let's move on to Holland versus England, Friday 7:45. Holland 6-4 to win this game, the draw 11-5, England in the betting at 15-8. Bash Dost to score and Holland to win was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 7-2. And Jamie Vardy to score and England to win was 18-5. That has been boosted to 9-2. David, what do you make of this squad that Gareth Southgate has assembled? Are there any notable omissions in your opinion? It looks to me like this is the kind of squad I expect on the back of an international tournament, not when you're going into one. It seems quite experimental.
Well, that's all he's got now, isn't it? I mean, the players he's called up, Nick Pope, James Tarkowski, Alfie Mawson, Lewis Cook. I'm 10 members of a boy band, aren't they? No, I mean, what is going on? If you look down the list of the England players in the squad, most of them, and this includes Harry Kane, by the way, have been out on loan at some stage in their careers. You know, could you imagine that years ago when you got the likes of Glenn Hoddle and Steven Gerrard and people like that who were just brilliant from the word go? And yet all these players have been deemed surplus to requirements at most of the clubs they've been at. I mean, it's just a shocking squad. And they haven't even got their best player, Harry Kane, in this one. Everybody was going mad at you about England in the last 2 matches against Brazil and Germany because we got 0-0 draws against them. Well, whoopee-doo. Brazil didn't get out of first gear in that match. I can't have England in this at all. I really can't. Holland have won the last 5 they've played, by the way. So, you know, I know that they were in crisis after failing to qualify for the World Cup, but they're bouncing back a bit. They've got the new manager, Pumpkin Faces, back in charge, Ronald Koeman. The worry about squad is Holland is that when you look down the squad, I see the name Ryan Babel. He's still knocking around and he's still playing for the national side. I cannot believe that after the dismal time he had at Liverpool. I just don't see England doing anything in this. I just can't have them. I think they're a team going from bad to worse with a manager who looks, in my eyes, clueless. And I'm on Holland all day long here. I know that Holland, this is no vintage Holland side, but it doesn't have to beat this England team.
Holland 6-4, Derek's pick. Everyone's talking about the goalkeeping situation. I want to talk about the Jake Livermore situation. I mean, how the hell is this man still in the squad? Southgate's talked about rewarding loyalty. This isn't a dog that curls up at his feet in front of the fire. I mean, he is manager of the England national side. Loyalty shouldn't be anything to do with it, basically. He's playing in the worst side in the Premier League, maybe the worst side we've ever seen in the Premier League, and he's at the heart of that defence, or he's at the heart of that midfield, and he's still getting picked for England.
Yeah, I don't see that one either. I don't see Livermore. I can see the loyalty point. I would go back to like when Germany had a really good team and Oliver Bierhoff was never getting in the team he was playing for at that time, but they'd pick him every time and he'd score. So if it works, if you've got a plan that works, fine, stick with it. But I don't think he's worked his plan out yet, so I don't think it's a case of that. The omission that I'd say has been a bit hard done to is Ben Mee. If you're picking everybody else from Burnley, then why are you leaving him out? It seems to me he might be the one that's making other players look better and getting overlooked himself.
Yeah.
So I think he's a bit unfortunate. Holland, like Derek says, have actually come back after, in, if they're coming into the post-Robin Snyder era, if you want to call it that, they have actually come out of it pretty well, and they're in decent form. So I can see that. I can't see England in this game because I think they've got one world-class player and he's not there. Mm. So the bet that I picked out of this one, because I'm always looking for an angle in friendlies, is I think it's 2-1 England not to score.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't mind being on that.
If you're looking at the historic performances when these two clubs have met, or these two nations have met, they tend to be entertaining games. Over 2.5 goals is available at 23-20. The last 13 meetings between England and Holland, England have just won once. That was a big one. It was pretty impressive. It was in Euro 96, the good old days, where England won 4-1 in the group stages. But they do tend to be entertaining, these meetings between these two nations. Over 2.5 is 23-20, if you fancy that angle on Holland versus England. Let's move on to Scotland. Scotland take on Costa Rica. This is 7:45 on Friday as well. Scotland 5-4 to win the game. The draw 21-10, Costa Rica 12-5. James Forrest to score and Scotland to win was 15-4. That's been enhanced to 4-1. And Brian Ruiz to score and Costa Rica to win was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 7-1. Do you think it's an embarrassment, Andy, that for the national team, that they wanted Michael O'Neill, he opted to stay with Northern Ireland, and they've had to go basically cap in hand to Alex McLeish for his second spell?
Well, yeah, they are scrambling about. It wasn't a job anybody wants, and you can kind of see why. I've looked through the squad in this. They've got, in the entire squad, they've got a total of 183 caps. And a total of 9 goals.
Wow.
Across the whole squad. The highest scorer in the squad is Matt Richtee, and that takes the brisket. I've been practising that one.
I like that.
So, and I just can't be with Scotland, but Costa Rica also, just, again, it's a bit like the Turkey Republic of Ireland game. Neither team really float my boat, and I can't see many goals. So, 0-0 is a 7-1 shot, and no, I'll be delighted with that.
0-0, 7-1 for Andy. I want to talk about Scott McTominay as well, Derek, because it's been described as Scotland winning the tug of war with England over Scott McTominay. This is Scott McTominay, Derek. What's going on?
Oh, dear. I think England called up Justin Clary for that tug of war, I think, to lose that one. Jesus. You look at the Scotland squad, and every time you look at it, it gets worse. Costa Rica, this takes you back to 1990, doesn't it? The World Cup in 1990. Yeah. And can you believe, I remember that day, I was working at the Racing Post and I backed Costa Rica. And I seem to remember they were 20-1 to beat Scotland on that day. And of course they did 1-0. They're only, 5-2 now, which shows you how they've come on and how Scotland have declined. Scotland are six places in the world rankings behind Costa Rica. And is behind Costa Coffee. I've got to go for Costa Rica because they've shown in the World Cup recently. You know, they're no mugs. They drew with England, didn't they? And Scotland never gets to a World Cup. I look at these odds and I'm struggling to work out how the Scots can be favourites. But I've said that in every international they've ever played. Costa Rica is a country invented to annoy Nicaragua. That seems to be the only reason they've invented. We're playing against a team that was invented to annoy everyone, and Scotland do very, very well at that. I'm going to go for Costa Rica because only because the opposition is Scotland.
You just cut out, Derek, before your Costa Coffee joke there. Is it worth re-recording that or not, Derek?
No.
12-5 Costa Rica. By the way, in that 1-0 win back in the 1990 World Cup, Alex McLeish played in that game. He did reasonably well in his first spell as well in charge. But as you mentioned, looking through that Scotland squad, not much talent in there at the moment. And 12-5 Costa Rica could be the play in the game. And finally, we'll look at Northern Ireland versus South Korea, which is 2:00 on Saturday. Northern Ireland 7-4, the draw 2-1, South Korea 7-4. Kyle Lafferty to score and Northern Ireland to win was 100-30. That's been enhanced to 7-2. Hyungmin Son to score and South Korea to win was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 5-1. I saw an article on a betting website written by Greg Murray, who was talking about the 2002 World Cup, if you can remember that, Andy, where it was co-hosted by South Korea and Gus Hiddink was in charge of South Korea, and they never previously won at a World Cup, but kicked off with that tournament win against Poland, winning 2-0, drew against the US, then won against Portugal to qualify for that knockout match against Italy, and they beat Italy in extra time. I just have no recollection of that at all. It was as if it never existed for me, Andy.
No, I do remember that. There's plenty of other things in my life that I've lost all memory of. The last winner's one of them. But yeah, we talk, when we come around to the World Cup in the office, we always talk about this. These teams from the far side of the world, as it were, are always underrated.
Yeah.
Always underrated, because we don't know any of the players, or a lot of them. And that applies to the South Korea squad. Yeah, there's a sprinkling of players playing in Europe, and most of them play in the Korean League or the J League.
Yeah.
And we just don't know many of them. But like Iran, when they turn up for a competition, they turn up. But for a friendly, travelling away from home, I'm not sure they're all that bothered. I'd be interested, you know, how much the big players play, particularly Son from Tottenham. How much of the game will he play? So I think Northern Ireland are actually, you know, they're a side that get the best out of what they've got. And I think they might have just enough to want to win this game. So I'd give them the edge here.
OK, Northern Ireland 7-4 to win the match. The draw 2-1 South Korea in the betting at 7-4. They have gone 8 matches unbeaten, South Korea, since the 3-1 defeat against Morocco back in October. Derek, your views on this?
Well, you mentioned that World Cup, the 2006. They actually got to the semi-final.
Yeah, unbelievable.
It is. It's that Northern Ireland, I've never got that far, even on PlayStation. South Korea have got to be a better, yeah? They've got a fully fit, full-strength squad going for this game. They're looking ahead to the World Cup. I'm guessing the players in that squad who are trying to impress to get to Russia. And, you know, I don't think they'll be taking things easy. I really don't. They're playing against the Northern Ireland team who, inexplicably, are 35 places above them in the world rankings. There's those world rankings again. On these odds, I've got to go for South Korea. There's players there who are, you know, we talk about Son, and you mentioned about how underrated Far Eastern teams are. Well, the same applies to players, because I was banging the drum about him, you know, very early in the season, and only finally now, when he's in this great run of goal-scoring form, is he getting the claim he deserves. I think he's one of the fellas that makes Tottenham tick.
Better than Salah. Player.
Yes, he is. Yes.
Oh, here we go. Knew he'd bite.
I'm going to go for South Korea here, because the thing about Northern Ireland are favourites here, just about, aren't they? But when Northern Ireland are in that position, they always disappoint. The only times you ever see Northern Ireland winning are when they're like 6 or 7 to 1, going to places like Russia or Ukraine, and, you know, getting a victory that no one expected. The terrible favourites. So I'm going to go for South Korea here, because I think they've got more. They've got players who will be at it, and I'm not sure Northern Ireland will, even though they're playing at home.
What has to happen, Derek, for you to change your opinion on Salah?
Well, you know, you mentioned it. Right, I had loads of messages after last weekend. You know, the 4 goals he scored. Right, well, 4 goals against. Here's a point there, Dave. He was 4-1 for the PFA Player of the Year award last Saturday morning. From Saturday night, he was 5-4. Right, because he scored 4 goals against Watford. Well, Huddersfield scored 4 against Watford. Everton did. Everton scored 3 against them. Is he 25% more likely to win the PFA award, which is what those odds imply, because he scored 4 goals against Watford? I'm sorry. Why would that be? It's just that. And but it goes to the point I've been hammering home all year. Goals influence people far, far too much. And I'll give you another case in point. Theo Walcott, that hat-trick against Croatia he got. Remember the headlines the next day? Theo, what an international force he is. He was crap that night. Absolutely awful. And he's been awful ever since. But he scored 3 goals, so therefore he was the next coming. It's nonsense.
OK. Before the... do you want to respond, Andy?
No, I just turned the key and let him go.
We were reminiscing, Derek, about your last winning Napot before the podcast, before we started recording. You've had the majority of your success on international football this season. I think we've had 2 international breaks, and you've had winners both times.
Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think that's correct.
I can remember that.
Yeah, you can remember that, Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll get you on that first, Derek.
Right, okay. In that case, I am going to go for Spain at 19-10 to beat Germany on Friday night.
Spain 19-10? Andy?
Do you know what? I remember a couple of international breaks, somebody writing Spain off was awful and putting Italy off against them.
thanks for recalling that. Under the radar.
How the tide's turned.
Andy,
I've gone deep into the undergrowth for this one. I've got 4-5 Senegal to beat Uzbekistan.
I like it. Senegal...
Playing in Morocco. There you go.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
that is something, isn't it? Senegal. They've gone 8-11 now, so someone agrees with you.
Rumours out.
You can only get the 8-11 now, I'm afraid. And I'm going with Cenk Tosun to score any time.
Oh, my trouble is...
at 9-5 against the Republic of Ireland. So Spain 19-10, Senegal 8-11, and Cenk Tosun at 9-5. I guarantee you... This will be the only podcast that puts up such an eclectic mix of football tips ahead of this weekend. Derek, thank you for Spain. I appreciate that. 19-10. And Senegal for you, Andy, 8-11. Cenk Tosun to score any time for me at 9-5. That win treble pays 13.02-1. Get on.
That's a ridiculous treble, that, isn't it? Uzbekistan. Oh, you like you follow their football all the time, Andy. Stay in the game.
Hi everyone, Alex Dunn here. Euro-napping as per normal. Dave Kellner actually collared me out in the office and said, I'd like you to record a nap, please, for the podcast, but you can't mention this team, you can't mention this team, you can't mention any of the home nations, and you can't do this either. Which left me with a choice of, well, quite little, to be honest, so thanks for that, Dave. Thankfully, though, I've actually managed to find an absolutely belting bet, and I'm straying away from the international scene. I think Dave wanted me to put up an international nap, but I'm almost purposefully going to go against exactly what he wants. There's a really good bet, though, in the Spanish Segunda. So the second division in Spain, and you might think, ugh, what? Look, this is great. Zaragoza at home to Sevilla Atletico. Now, Zaragoza are threes on. The draw 130 and the away side are 15-2. Zaragoza are certainties here. They're threes on, which, by the way, is fantastic. If you are planning an ACCA, whatever it is that you fancy at the weekend, that threes on has to go in. Sevilla Atletico are abysmal. They're at the bottom of the league. They just keep losing week in, week out. They're already as good as down. They cannot get out of trouble. And they come up against the Zaragoza side, who are still fighting to get into that playoff scene at the end of the season. Zaragoza have hit form at the right time. They're absolutely flying in the league. They're currently sixth. They've won the last six in a row in the league. They've won the last five at home as well. They will win this. The threes on is appealing, but to win to nil, even money. Sevilla Atletico, whatever you want to call them, they've only scored 19 times in 31 games this season. Zaragoza to win to nil, Sunday, 3 o'clock, the European nap.
Now, it's a pleasure to welcome onto the podcast Stuart James, a football writer for The Guardian and Observer. This is this week's FWA guest on the podcast, and we have international football to talk about on this edition of the FWA section. And Stuart, first of all, a warm welcome along to the podcast. Good to have you with us.
Oh, good morning. Thanks very much. Really nice to be on, Dave.
And Stuart, I suppose one of the questions that's been posed in the press recently is whether England should boycott the World Cup in Russia. Theresa May has said that it is highly likely that Russia was behind the poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. She warned Moscow that they will face action if they don't explain their role, and some British officials have suggested boycotting the World Cup is the action to take. What are your views on this subject, Stuart?
Yeah, I've read those comments, Dave. I mean, it's obviously a worrying situation at the moment. I think it's too early at this moment in time to come to that decision, but it's certainly concerning. I think some of the comments that have been made probably don't help things in a way. Boris Johnson's latest remarks probably aren't going to do anything to improve the situation. You know, that said, you know, some of the points he makes are clearly worrying when he mentions the fact that the British diplomat who'd be responsible for liaising with the UK fans has been has been thrown out as part of the diplomatic expulsions in the wake of obviously what's happened with the former Russian spy. I mean, that situation is clearly a big concern because, you know, I've been to Russia many times actually with work, and I'm going there in a couple of weeks' time with Arsenal in the Europa League. And, you know, the thing that you want most of all is to feel safe. It's different when we're travelling as journalists. We're often travelling as part of an organised tour group. It probably won't be like that with a lot of the fans. Some of them will be going independently. And there are obviously concerns if that is a situation in Russia whereby, you know, the point of contact for our supporters there pretty much doesn't exist anymore. In terms of whether we should boycott, I mean, it's a big question. And I think the important thing here is that a decision is made between the FA and the government, you know, together, not where we stray into what's happened with cricket tours in the past, where individual players are asked, you know, do you want to go or not? I think we've got to try and avoid that situation. But I still feel at this moment in time, Dave, what we were in March, we're still, you know, two and a bit months away. I think it's too soon yet. And I really hope that it doesn't come to that. I really hope that England are at the World Cup because, of course, safety is the primary concern, but I just don't like it when politics and sport mixes in this way, and it leads to the sort of thing we're talking about now.
And if you put aside those political tensions and just talk about the fans for a second, Stuart, because there've been many documentaries produced about the organised hooliganism in Russia.
Yeah.
If you were just a fan and not a journalist and were thinking about going to the World Cup, do you think those fans are foolhardy? Are they brave? Are they naive? What would you go there as a fan if you weren't in a journalistic capacity?
No, I wouldn't, Dave.
Yeah.
No, I'd say that. I mean, I've been there outside of work once before, you know, for what, you know, normal holiday, so to speak. But I have to say, no, I absolutely wouldn't, because I think, you know, that holiday was different. Football wasn't in the mix. And it clearly would be if I was going to a World Cup. And we saw what happened in Marseille in the European Championships a couple of years ago. Hey, England fans aren't blameless here. I'm not saying that by any stretch, but I just think it's a potentially volatile situation. The tensions are obviously raised given how relations are between the two countries at this moment in time. And no, quite simply, I wouldn't be going. I wouldn't call fans, you know, naive for going. I mean, hopefully they'll think through these things, you know, very carefully. But I think I went to Brazil 4 years ago. There were concerns before then, you know, in a totally different way. You know, people were worried then about their own safety. And I was in Ukraine for the Euros back in 2012. And again, there were worries at the time. But I feel this is another level again. My personal view is that, you know, if I wasn't working there this summer and someone offered me a chance to go out there as a supporter, I'd politely decline.
Okay. Derek, your view on this. I mean, we've had loads of quotes from MPs come out about this. I think the most hilarious quote, in my opinion, was from Stephen Kinnock, who suggested in Parliament that Theresa May should ask FIFA to postpone the World Cup until next year, like that was ever going to happen. I mean, you can imagine the FIFA head honchos rolling around in the aisles with Stephen Kinnock suggesting that May should put it to FIFA to postpone the World Cup for a year.
What, just think, is that to get Harry Kane fit, is it? I mean, boycotting the World Cup. We just boycott the knockout stage, I think. We usually do, don't we? I've never known. Is there any proof, Bursley, by the way, that any of this poisoning is Russia? Theresa May says so we're all supposed to believe it. It's absolute nonsense. And if we did boycott the World Cup, who would that, you know, it would only harm England and the teams who were due to play England. I mean, do you think Russia would be that bothered? It would be like Scotland boycotting the World Cup, which they normally do. It's just, no one would give two hoots. It's absolute nonsense. And you know, have I mentioned before, Dave, that I studied Russian at school and on a field trip? Just give you an idea of what it was like in those days. On a field trip, me and the other Russian students were approached by a guy from MI5 or one of the other intelligence agencies, and he asked if, you know, he said, like, you know, does intelligence appeal? I said, yeah, but I prefer big bazoomas. And then that was the last I heard from him. I think it's absolute nonsense, all this talk of a boycott of the World Cup. It won't happen. And I honestly think, I haven't studied Russian, although I've never been there. If England fans get into trouble with Russian fans, why would it just be the England fans? Shouldn't all fans be worried? wouldn't all fans be worried? And you might say, well, it's heightened tension because of this incident. But the tensions were already, we were already worrying about the safety of England fans before this happened. So why is it just England fans? Does it not suggest that maybe England fans are to blame here? I mean, we don't see the French fans getting involved with the Russians, or you know, I'm sure the French supporters and Holland supporters and whoever supporters of whichever other nations are not that bothered. Why is it England fans? If I was going over to the World Cup, I can guarantee I wouldn't be getting into any trouble.
I think Stuart, it is different between these two nations, though, isn't it? I mean, historically, there's always been that animosity between Russia and England fans. Maybe I'm not saying England fans are completely blameless in this scenario, but it does appear that the Russians do target the English.
Yeah, well, I think that was particularly the case in Marseille, where they were sort of almost sitting ducks in a way. That said, I agree with what Derek said. I mean, you know, I looked at some of those fans there and I thought, well what are you doing sitting there drinking? You know, if there's Russian hooligans running riot, then, you know, I'd choose somewhere else personally. I'd go and find a bar somewhere away from where all the trouble was. Mm. So we invite it at times. And you know, we've seen that down the years. And there's other nations that have gone to tournaments and, you know, their fans have behaved impeccably and not got wrapped up in all the hooliganism. So, you know, you make a choice as a supporter, ultimately, whether you put yourself in that position or not. But that said, I've been to Moscow, I think it's 7 times now. And, you know, and I've had some strange experiences there and you know, it can be particularly difficult dealing with officials. That's not straightforward. And people might say, well, it's the same when you come to this country. But I do feel it will be slightly complicated by that. But I do come back to what I said about, you know, Ukraine and Brazil. You know, there was a lot of scaremongering that went on before those two tournaments. And actually, when you're out there, you kind of thought, well, what was the fuss all about? Now, whether in Ukraine they put on a bit of a front for a while, I don't know. But I certainly didn't feel vulnerable at any time out there. And likewise in Brazil. Look, it's one of those stories we love as well, isn't it, Dave, on the eve of a, you know, a big tournament, you know, in terms of security concerns and all the rest. And, of course, here it does resonate in a different way because of the recent incident and the relations between the two countries. But I will come back to my original point. I wouldn't go if I was if I was a fan. Simple as that. It just doesn't appeal to me, Russia, in that respect.
Let's assume England are going to go to the World Cup and everything's going to turn out fine, and they'll be fielding 11 players. The quality of those 11 players are open to debate in the first game, and Gareth Southgate will have some tough decisions to make. At this stage, assuming everyone is fit, who would you go with in that first game of the 2018 World Cup if you were in Gareth Southgate's shoes? Formation as well here, Stuart, so you're predicting the future.
Oh, I should let Derek go first here. my worrying thing here, confession to make, I was really happy with my team, and then I did a Stuart Pearce in Nottingham Forest and realised I had 12 players down. So, partly due to the fact that I was trying to crowbar in a back three, which is what we're told Southgate will play. So look, I've gone against that. So in a way, I know that my team won't be what Southgate's team is, because I don't actually feel a back three works. I started off from the point that I was trying to accommodate what I felt were England's four best attacking players, which was Sterling, Ali, Rashford and Kane. So I had those three. So I've got a 4-2-3-1, and I've got Sterling on the right, Ali playing as a number 10, Rashford on the left behind Kane. Mm-hmm. And then I've gone with Eric Dier and Jack Wiltshire. I didn't think Jack Wiltshire should have gone to Euro 2016. I didn't feel he had enough game time. He hasn't had loads now, but he's clearly in a much better condition than he was then. And so I've gone with Dier and Wiltshire in the holding roles, and then the back four. Walker, who is one of the few nailed-on picks, I'd say, in this England team at right back. Cahill, who obviously isn't even in the squad at the minute, which I feel is a little bit harsh. I've gone with him in Stones, and Stones clearly hasn't been playing much. But I just feel that would be the best partnership. And then left-back's a huge problem as well. Personally, I don't think that Ashley Young should be England's left-back. He's not a left-back by nature, and I feel really that's a sort of indictment of the state of affairs at Man United that he's playing there at the moment. So I've gone with Danny Rose there, who's also had a difficult season. And then in goal, it's like picking names out of a hat, isn't it, really? Let's be honest. I don't think Hart should be number one. I've gone with Pickford, but I think it's toss of a coin in terms of Pickford or Butland. So Pickford, Walker, Cahill, Stones, Rose, then Dier, Wiltshire, Sterling, Ali, Rashford and Kane up front.
Weirdly, Stuart, we kind of agree. I've got the same front six as you. Dyer, Wilshere holding with Sterling, Ali, Rashford and Kane up front. I've gone with Pickford in net as well, but yeah. I've gone Walker, Jones, Stones and Young as my back my back four. So slight difference there.
We've got nine out of 11. That's not bad.
That's not bad. Derek, you now put yourself in Southgate's shoes. They faced Tunisia in Volgograd Monday the 18th of June in that first game. I don't suppose it's an enviable task being England manager at the moment.
Not with the shower he's got in front of him, definitely not. I'm going for a 4-4-3 formation because I'm playing rush keeper. If you played all four of those in the squad now, I still wouldn't fancy England to keep a clean sheet. That's how ordinary they are. I'd probably go for Pickford because he seems to be the in choice at the moment, but you know, it wouldn't bother me which of the four went in, really. I'm playing a back three. Yeah, forward thinking, not like you two dinosaurs. Maguire, Stones and Gomez. I know Stones has been in and out of the City, but he is the future of England and he would always be in my team. Gomez, I don't see as a right-back, even though he's played there a lot at Anfield. I think he's a centre-half and he did well when he played in those friendlies in November, whenever it was. And I love Harry Maguire. I think he's a tremendous player and very underrated. So I'll put those three at the back. The two wing backs, you might think, are defensively minded because they're two full backs, really, Walker and Danny Rose, but they are the best by miles of the wide men, and they can, you know, they're so good going forward as well. We could play them at wing backs. So that's still a defensive looking back line at the moment. I'd still put Dyer in because he will be in there. He's not my kind of international player, a holding midfielder, but he needs, you know, they'll put somebody in there and it'll be him. I'd put Henderson in. Because he does the job. He's still, you know, we're not a flair player, but he does the job. Now, we need some flair in this team now, and this is where I'm putting Lallana in. I know he's been in and out. I think, well, he's been out largely at Anfield, but he'll go to the World Cup fresh, and he does bring something different, and he hasn't let England down in the past. He would be there, and then I'd have Dele Alli just in front of them, and then, of course, obviously, Harry Kane. I wouldn't have Rashford in because...
No Sterling either,
fan.
Derek.
No, I wouldn't have Sterling in. He wouldn't fit in that team. No, I wouldn't have Sterling in either.
Anybody who's been listening to my nap selections from League One over the last few weeks will pretty much already have an idea where I am going because I'm playing this side for the third week consecutively because they are way, 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 way too big at 23-10. To win away at Charlton. Yes, for the third weekend, I am playing Plymouth Argyle. 23-10 to win away at Charlton is massive. Let's look at the evidence. Plymouth have won 11 of their last 14 games. Plymouth have won 7 in 8. And Plymouth have won 3 in 4 on their travels. And they're away at Charlton. A Charlton side who have scored 1 goal in their last 3 games. Plymouth scored 3 in their last game alone. And Charlton at home, since the back end in November, they have won 2 games at home. It's not a happy valley. They have won 2 games in about 9 at home. Portsmouth, Gillingham, Oxford and Shrewsbury have all gone and won at Charlton. And Plymouth are 6th, Charlton are 9th. There is 5 points difference between these two sides. I mean, Plymouth... draw no bet at 5-4, that's a great price. But I'm all in on Plymouth at 23-10 is my nap to win away at Charlton. It's massive, it's way too big, and it cannot be ignored. So I'm not ignoring it. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
Last week, the obvious 3-4 was Accrington to beat Forest Green, but I got greedy. I added a goal scorer to try and get more value. It scuppered it. It's why I always nap the outrights, even if they are 3-4. So this week, my nap is an outright, and it is 3-4. Last week was first against second bottom. This week, it is seventh against third bottom, but actually the price is even more justified because Coventry should ease past Grimsby, because Grimsby are a wreck. Former investment banker Michael Jolly's appointment as manager, that's a head-scratcher. A 40-year-old who's never played professional football, his management experience is with other university sides or in Sweden, where he won 15 points in 16 games. A home draw over a very poor Port Vale side in his opening game remains his only point at Grimsby, one of only 4 points Grimsby have won in the 16 games they've played over the last 3 months. Away from home, 8 games, no wins, 1 draw, 7 defeats. They are, of course, bottom of the form table. No team has won fewer away games. They have the worst points per game record of any team in the league on the road. They have the home games coming up against the only two teams below them, Chesterfield and Barnet, and they will be the fixtures they earmark for points, not this one, away at Coventry. Coventry, who's only dropped points in the last 4 games, was a 2-2 draw with then leaders Luton. It's also one of only 2 matches in Coventry's last 10 at home where they've dropped points. The other was against now leaders Accrington. Coventry's home record, stretching back to the start of December, is lost 1, drawn 1, 1-8, scoring 20, including knocking Premier League Stoke out of the FA Cup in that time. The Rico Arena is turning into a fortress, not somewhere Grimsby will prosper. Now, Grimsby have failed to score in 9 of the last 13 away, but I'm not going to get scuppered by going too far in again this week. So the outright, it's the Knapp, it's Coventry at 3-4.
That's it for the podcast this week. I do hope you've enjoyed it, folks. Thank you to Stuart James, our FWA guest from The Guardian and The Observer. You can follow Stuart on Twitter as well, at StuartJamesGNM is Stuart's Twitter handle. You can follow myself, at D Kellner. Tweet your England starting 11s if you wish to do so for the first game of the World Cup. That's going to be hotly debated over the next couple of months. Thanks as well, of course, to Derek McGovern and Andy Excel for their contributions. Alex Dunn for ignoring my instruction and tipping in the Spanish Segunda. Good luck to Alex. And, of course, also to Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross. Of course, thanks to you for listening. Do check out The Punt. It is published weekly, twice weekly, in fact, on Mondays and Thursdays by going to audioboom.com and typing in The Punt. Lots of podcasts available here with William Hill at audioboom.com. Just type in William Hill for the full range of podcasts every single week. And last but not least, check out all the betting online at williamhill.com or on the app ahead of the international football this weekend. Thank you again for listening, and we'll be back with more action on the Punt Podcast on Monday.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.